with the first case, which is 17-7046, Clark versus Colbert. You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is John Bryan. I'm here representing the appellant, Gary Clark. We're asking the court to enter an order reversing three decisions by the district court, granting summary judgment on issues related to the ADA and the intersection with the Fourth Amendment, in addition to claims regarding the appropriate standard for deliberate indifference in the pretrial detention context for medical care.
Counsel, let me ask you, in regards to the ADA, are you suggesting that the officers, every time they respond, that they're going to have to know something about the ADA requirements before they can formally arrest somebody?
The ADA was enacted in 1990, along and includes Title II.
Kind of familiar with that.
When an officer does arrive and he is aware that there is some type of mental disability that is in play, the standard is one of reasonableness under Title II. And if there are if there is an opportunity to safely evaluate whether or not an accommodation can be made for this particular individual, then I believe the only obligation on the officer is to engage in only those measures that would be reasonable under the circumstances.
Well, how do you define safely then? Because here we had a man with a knife, and they already knew that he had cut his own brother. So does safety then depend on whether he's armed in any way or just has his fists maybe to fight with the police? How are you going to define what is or is not safety in regards to that work?
I think you can draw from parallel standards under the Fourth Amendment and look at the totality of the circumstances. And when you look at the case law, I think there are several factors that you can glean that would determine whether or not an accommodation would be reasonable. Some of those factors would be whether the individual is secluded.
I can cut to the chase. What's your best case to rely on in the application of a police officer having to rely upon the ADA before they can make an arrest?
From the Tenth Circuit, there's the Go Here case.
That doesn't quite fit, but go ahead.
There is also the case from the Fourth Circuit, which is Waller versus City of Danville. And in that particular case, the Fourth Circuit determined that the accommodations that the officers provided were reasonable. And in that, the factual circumstances of that case involved a hostage situation with somebody who was secluded and also who was armed.
Well, do you agree that when the officers arrived on the scene and observed what was going on, that there was probable cause at that moment for them to arrest your client in this matter?
Yes, I would agree that based upon what they understood at the time.
Then why do they need to do more?
Because they were also aware of other mitigating factors in this particular circumstance. They knew that you had somebody who was a mental health patient. And so
versus somebody who was standing on a porch and had already cut his brother with a big knife. So, okay.
The situation is different because Mr. Clark's ability to communicate with the officers would be impaired by reason of his disability.
How do you know that?
Because he was laboring under this disability in which he had schizophrenia and believed that the people that he was interacting with were demons.
And more to the point, how are the officers going to know that? Yeah. How is a reasonable officer going to know that when he comes to the scene of the crime?
In most circumstances, they wouldn't. If you simply happen to encounter somebody on the street, I would agree with Your Honor that that would not necessarily be apparent. But in this circumstance, it was actually communicated to them by the brother who met each of the officers as they arrived on the scene.
Well, it's my recollection. Did they communicate about the demons? I don't recall that. All I recall them communicating was that there was some sort of mental disturbance with the brother and that he was off his meds.
Correct. The communication that was given from the brother to the officers was that he was schizophrenic and he was off his medication. The particular delusions that Mr. Clark suffered from were reoccurring and generally involved religious ideologies.
Well, that's fine, but the reasonable officer would not have known that at the time. These officers, in fact, would not have known that at the time, right?
Correct. If there was some type of exigency where they needed to take immediate steps to end the situation, then it would not be known to them. In this particular circumstance, they had a 45-minute window of time in which to engage the family, to gather intelligence, to discuss the situation with the family, and that was something that the officers chose not to do. And part of this claim relates to the inadequate training that was provided to them that would have given them the tools to discuss intelligence gathering and how to bring the situation peacefully to an end without resorting and jumping to a use of force.
Well, they did. They commenced with the use of non-lethal force. I mean, I don't. Nobody would object to the concept that he should be the Mr. Clark should be disarmed. I mean, he had a serious weapon. He certainly was a danger to himself as well as to others. So it seems like a reasonable officer would want to disarm him. And they commenced with non-lethal force to do that, right?
That's correct.
Where did they go off the rail, you think?
They went off the rail by failing to, number one, appreciate and understand the totality of the circumstances. There's a total disregard for the mental health component in this scenario.
At what point in time are you going to impose your suggestion in regard to this matter? They get there, even though they're told he has a 10-inch butcher knife or whatever, or had already cut somebody with it. So in the sequence of time, and you already said they had probable cause based on when they got there. At what point in time are we going to enforce the rule that you're suggesting?
In this particular circumstance, you have a situation that is not deteriorating. It's stable. The officers
on
the
A guy with a 10-inch knife is a stable situation, threatening to use it when they threatens the officers to come forward?
I am taking the officers own assessment of the scenario in which they said he was contained on the porch. They had set up themselves at a distance that created a reactionary gap so that their own safety was not an immediate issue. They had cover from both a sniper and a canine who could...
Now, that was later on. I'm asking you, give me a time sequence when the officer is going to be required to call in help in regards to this matter based upon the mental. You have two officers, the sniper and the dog. Those all come later. So is that the time that you're suggesting that the rule would be applicable?
The rule would be applicable when the situation was stable. It wasn't deteriorating. Mr. Clark wasn't becoming more agitated. And they had time and opportunity to deliberate on a variety of options. And that was not done in this particular circumstance. And they did not consider the mental health component at all. And I think that is where this went off the rails, is the failure to appreciate what was being put forward in front of them caused them to react to this situation in a way that would frustrate the ability of Mr. Clark to communicate and understand what is going on with the officer.
What would a reasonably trained officer, in your view, have done in this circumstance?
A reasonably trained officer in this circumstance would have, number one, considered the mental health component to what was happening in front of him. And from that, his training should have dictated the scenario that goes from there. Which is what?
To call us a psychiatrist?
But it would be to, number one, you would call somebody that has some type of mental health training, whether that's another officer or whether that's one of the officers on the scene. Somebody who has the ability to effectively communicate with the person in front of you. The second thing that they should do would be to gather intelligence from the family members who are nearby. They can provide valuable information to the family about what the nature of the delusions are. If there's somebody that may be responsive or that person may be responsive to another individual. And these are the things that the Waller Court said were all reasonable things.
Did you lay these things out for the district court?
I apologize.
Did you lay these accommodations, purported accommodations, out for the district court?
Yes, Judge. We set forth not only the intelligence gathering information. The expert that provided an opinion discussed all the various options that mental health training provides for the officers, and including training that's provided here in Oklahoma through CLEAT.
And you made an argument to that effect in your brief below.
Yes, Judge. We talked about the various options, the intelligence gathering, the fact that the use of pain stimuli against somebody who is a mental health patient is not going to be generally effective because of the mental health component.
On the question of him being stable, your opposing counsel makes quite a bit in their briefing about the fact that he could have it wasn't like he was contained. I mean, he could have turned around and gone into an area where there could have been other people with his knife, and this individual had not been following the directions of the officers. That's the whole point, and they've been talking to him for 45 minutes. So where is the stability in that? I mean, he was a threat to not only the officers but to others, was he not?
I would disagree with that assessment, primarily based upon the testimony of Deputy Dorr, who was the first supervising officer who arrived at the scene and specifically said the situation was contained, or that Mr. Clark was contained on the porch. One of the other deputies also agreed that had Mr. Clark left the porch, it would have been easy for him to merely approach him and disarm him.
It would have been easy for them to disarm him?
That was the testimony of one of the deputies.
Would have been easy for them to kill him, but I don't know about disarm him. What I'm troubled about in this scenario is it seems to me that when you think about what a reasonable officer would do when confronted with a guy with a 10-H blade on a knife who had just stabbed his brother, what you would think is a reasonable officer who's trying to care about this individual is going to do exactly what they did. They didn't have non-lethal options available to them, so their only option was a binary choice. Either I shoot him or I don't. And so they call Broken Arrow Police Department to come in. I'm having a hard time seeing why that's not reasonable. They did exactly what you would expect somebody to do who cared about not taking your client's life.
The failure to appreciate the mental health component.
And where do you derive the legal predicate for that? And please don't tell us it's Aldaba, the case that has been superseded by the Supreme Court. I assume you accept the fact that's not law for anything now.
I would propose that it is part of the totality of the circumstances when you are confronted with somebody who has a mental health issue.
Is it an obligatory part of the totality of the circumstances?
It's a part of the totality that was aware that the officers were that they were provided information about. This is different than a situation from a situation where the officers encountered somebody on the street and they had no idea whether he was laboring under some mental disability.
Okay, they consider it. Check. I considered it. That doesn't mean that they don't consider every other aspect, including the 10-H blade that the guy had. So, I mean, what sort of weight does one give it? I mean, the fact that one considers it, you say that the officer said, they testified, they did not consider it at all in their plan to go after him, but that doesn't mean they weren't aware of it. I mean, so what weight do you have to give it? It seems like to me you're positing that there's some obligatory weight that's associated with the consideration.
I would believe that it has substantial weight because it goes to the ability of the person that they're trying to communicate with to understand that what is happening in front of him. Mr. Clark, because of his disability, had difficulty understanding the commands that were being given to him, which is unlike somebody who doesn't labor under that same disability, who can understand and then reject whatever the police officer's instructions are.
But you're asking us to formulate a rule or a case law that says to officers under government acronyms, which ADA or ADEA, then all reasonable officers are going to say, oh, yeah, this is an ADA problem, or it could be an ADEA problem, of which, as a lawyer, you and I both know, we always have to go look up what that acronym stands for. And you're expecting a police officer to know that reasonably under the circumstances of this case.
Judge Baldock, I've run out of time.
Go ahead and answer.
Yeah. I am not proposing that the officers have to juggle a particular ADA standard. In fact, what we've proposed is that the standard be coterminous with that under the Fourth Amendment, and that is merely reasonableness under the totality of the circumstances. And an officer who behaves and acts reasonably in not only engaging in a use of force scenario, but also in terms of accommodations or reasonableness, will not have any difficulties under the ADA.
But that's not what you argued in point two. You're saying specifically that there was a violation under Title II of the Americans with Disability Act, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Before you sit down, I hear the argument about the, kind of the moment in time where this thing went off the rails. Really, it seems to me that the training issues that you're talking about are really directed to the Broken Arrow officers, yet the ADA claim is against the county. And I see a real disconnect between your claim directed at the county and Sheriff Colbert and the actions of the Broken Arrow Police Department, which is really the ones who administered the pain-inducing force that led to the charging of the officers by Mr. Clark.
Yes, and in this particular scenario, the Broken Arrow Police Department, the captain who was on duty, testified that he was acting at the direction of the sheriff. He believed that he was acting under his authority, and we've cited the CFRs in this particular case that under Title II, you cannot contract around your ADA liability either by using a contractor or through other means. And this was a call out from Wagner County. They're the ones that brought Broken Arrow to the scene. They used Broken Arrow as their own instrumentality to carry out their law enforcement obligations. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, of the ADA.
Wagner County had nothing to do with Broken Arrow's training.
The problem is that they are still responsible for their own training, and what they did was they called an agency to the scene, not because of an ADA issue. They called another agency to the scene for a use of force issue, and they didn't bring a hostage negotiator. They didn't bring a mental. They didn't call them because of ADA compliance. They called them because of a use of force scenario.
How do we know that these other techniques would have been successful? That seems somewhat speculative to see how a schizophrenic, agitated person would react. I mean, it seems to me that even a skilled counselor, we'd still end up in the exact same situation where the person attacks the officers.
I think in requiring some type of outcome determinative evidence sets the bar too high. What I think the standard should be is one of reasonableness, and that is...
Well, we have to have some confidence that the alternative accommodations would be effective as part of our reasonableness assessment, and how do we know that?
In this particular scenario, you knew that the situation was not deteriorating. You knew that his delusions often involved religious scenarios. His brother had tried to reach a priest immediately before the arrival. He actually testified that one of the officers he did not consider to be a demon. So, if
I'm just, you know, I get your claim. I just, you know, if Mr. Clark had turned the weapon on himself and, you know, committed suicide, you know, it seems like the officers are in a damned if they do and damned if they don't situation, and that seems to me a part of the reasonableness calculation you have to make.
I would agree with Your Honor if he had presented some type of suicidal ideations, that's certainly something that needs to be considered and calculated, but that's not this case.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Appreciate your argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Wood?
May it please the Court. My name is Stephen Garys. I represent the Board of County Commissioners and Nurse Vicki Holland in this case. Your Honor, the ADA doesn't apply to the Board in this case because the Broken Arrow Police Department were the ones who formulated the plan and proceeded to move forward with the plan. The Wagner County Sheriff's Office contacted the Broken Arrow Police Department for the very reasons why they were put in charge, so that they would have less lethal methods at their disposal to use in trying to corral Mr. Clark and to de-arm him.
Well, doesn't Mr. Clark allege that there are certain actions that the Board of Commissioners could have taken, like bringing in a mental health person and doing other things? In other words, the option, I think, as opposing counsel would frame it, was not just to call in somebody with non-lethal things like the pepper balls, but it was also to consider the mental health element and bring in people to address that. In other words, weren't there things that your client is being charged, not whether it's right or wrong, but being charged with having done on your own that precipitated this problem?
Well, our client called Broken Arrow. Other than that, Broken Arrow was placed, their captain, who had different training on the methods on the use of force, he was put in control of the situation.
Well, the question becomes one of omission. I mean, if they're saying that he had a mental health issue and there were things that needed to be addressed, and you call in the SWAT squad, you know, to address that problem and say, hey, guys, take over. You know, you do it, and then they shoot him. The problem is there are certain things that you did not do that they're holding you responsible for. Are they not?
Well, I believe they're making that argument. However,
okay. Well, if they're making that argument, that goes to the question of whether you are within the scope of liability, not to say whether it's right or wrong, but whether you would be a proper defendant is what I'm asking.
I believe that the Wagner County Sheriff's Office performed their task with trying, because of the exigency of the circumstance. At the time, Mr. Clark is on the porch, and at the time, he held the knife to his throat. Also, this issue of containment with regard to whether he was contained or not, he could have entered back into that home at any time where we didn't know who was in that home, and that he would have had other weapons at his disposal. We don't think that it got to the point that there would have been an opportunity to call for a mental health personnel because of the exigency of the circumstance of the weapon involved.
On that point, I recall there was a lot of discussion in your brief about that, but was there any testimony by anybody, one of the officers on the scene, who expressed, obviously their subjective views don't count, but it factors into the objective analysis, was there anybody who expressed concern about him going back into the home or expressed concern about him actually going out the back way, which I recall is also part of your argument?
Yes, they were concerned. They were concerned for their own safety and for his safety and for the totality of the circumstances, contrary to counsel's argument. Yes, they were concerned about what he may do or what else was in the home. There were a lot of unknowns in the situation, and under the exigency, the best cause of action was to contact Broken Arrow, who had these other tools at their disposal.
And my point was, did they testify to that?
Yes, I believe they did, and I believe it's cited in our brief, Your Honor.
All right.
So we feel that under the decisions that were made in this case, pursuant to the actions that were taken by Broken Arrow were those of the Broken Arrow Police Department. Counsel for appellant has taken much upset. He's upset with the fact that the pepper balls were used. Well, the pepper balls were used by the Broken Arrow Police Department. The Wagner County Sheriff's Office, they weren't trained in the use of pepper balls. They didn't have experience with the use of pepper balls. In fact, almost all of the use of force materials that were brought to the scene were those of Broken Arrow, of which the Wagner County Sheriff's Office didn't have direct training. That would include the taser. We weren't certified or carried taser. The person identified as the sniper, who was a Broken Arrow police officer.
What about the testimony that they believed the sheriff was controlled the situation?
Well, the sheriff, by his own testimony, told Captain Dufresne, "You're in charge. Do what you need to do in this situation." And he stepped back from the incident and observed from that position. Again,
can he do that under the ADA?
I think he can. Now plaintiff's counsel has made an argument that there's this that they fall under, that there's an agency relationship that's created by this, but I don't believe there is, and I don't believe that the case of Phillips versus Tiona, which was cited in plaintiff's brief, unpublished 10th Circuit opinion, supports that in all circumstances, anyone who the sheriff's office would call is now their agent under the ADA, and we're required for their actions.
Well, I don't know if I'd frame it that way, but the sheriff called for backup, and he directed the backup to do what steps were necessary, and their argument is that he should have had a different approach in dealing with a schizophrenic suspect.
Well, I believe his actions are reasonable because of the training issue. The training with regard to the use of materials and weapons and defensive tools that the sheriff's office didn't use and wasn't trained in. So he turned over the situation to the Broken Arrow Police Department because they're the ones with the expertise and the certifications in order to use those materials.
Help me refresh my memory as to who actually ended up shooting the
It's unclear who actually struck him with a bullet. However, the testimony is that two of the Wagner County Sheriff's officers discharged their firearm and that the Broken Arrow Police Department officer.
You're arguing in a circle because you're saying you called in one group because you weren't trained and didn't understand all of that, and we come all the way back around to the people that actually did the shooting was the sheriff's deputies.
I understand that argument, but it's important to point out in this case that that's not part of the appellant's argument in this case. In fact, the appellant has taken no issue with the use of deadly force with the discharge of the weapons. The issue that they've taken in this case is the use of the pepper ball gun and the claim that that incited Mr. Clark to exit the porch. Once he exited the porch with the knife and was running towards the officer, and testimony appears that he was running towards the officer that had fired the pepper ball gun, the officers had no choice at that time but to discharge the weapons. In fact, it was Captain Dufresne of the Broken Arrow Police Department that shouted out, "Discharge your weapon, fire, fire, we had to stop him." Your Honor, I'm going to turn over the rest of my time to co-appellee's counsel.
May it please the Court, Randall Wood for Bob Colbert. Mr. Colbert couldn't join us today, but I think that he would want me to emphasize to you a couple of points off the bat. Number one, he would want me to emphasize how little involvement he had, and I would disagree with a representation made to the court today that Captain Dufresne of the Broken Arrow Police Department was of the mind that he was operating there under the authority of Bob Colbert.
He asked for authority. I mean, at some point, I can't see how one can wash their hands of responsibility. If he goes to the sheriff, as he did, what do you want me to do? Do whatever you have to do. Number one, he asked the sheriff what to do. So he didn't just do something, he asked, which would suggest he was operating at the behest of the sheriff. And then two, at some point, the sheriff has to be responsible for what that actor does, doesn't he?
I think that we get into particular issues of personal participation when Captain Dufresne of the Broken Arrow Police Department says, "I was the decision maker." I do understand that, yes, Sheriff Colbert said, "Do what you got to do," but he truly was thinking that he turned over the decision-making process to the people that they had called in to handle the situation with less lethal force.
That's all fine and well, but he dispatched this person to act. And said, and the fact that he did it in general terms, it would seem to me, doesn't absolve him of any responsibility for what that person did, does it? Why?
Well, I would say that when we get into the issues of who made the decision specifically, tactically, of what to do, it wasn't Sheriff Colbert. And I don't think you can say, well, now we're going to get an issue of some kind of a respondeat superior liability. It has to be who made the decisions in terms of supervisory liability to impose under Section 1983, which might be a somewhat different concept. But getting further into the argument then, I would say also that there is truly no underlying constitutional violation. Because if you hear the argument today, and my time is moving on, it really is that, okay, we had a use of force, that is, the shots fired, that at the point that occurred, that would be something that would be reasonable, would be constitutional. But then we're saying, well, let's go back and say that the law would require that the officer should, you know, consider the mental health of the suspect. But there's a little more to that argument, really, because it's okay, I think one of the comments was, okay, we've considered it, we've checked the box. And the rest of the argument is, consider the mental health of the suspect and then do something different. Then do what? What's an officer to do? Call in a counselor, call in a priest, call in a pastor, call in a crisis intervention team. Do something else. And I submit to the court that this really is the provocation rule or the bad tactics argument that's been disavowed by Sheehan and Mendez. That raises real issues for an officer because, you know, what's an officer to do? An officer could reasonably conclude that under these circumstances, the use of the pepper ball was appropriate because truly the first order of business is get the knife out of his hand. Because even if you call in a crisis intervention team or a counselor, what are they going to do? Counsel with the man who's showing no signs of, you know, getting better or embracing rational reality, but is continuing to, you know, brandish the knife. And a counselor would have to then, I guess, approach the man, try to, as best they could, avoid the sweeps of the knife, wrestle the man down to the ground, get the knife out of his hands, administer large amounts of Haldol. That's, you know, eventually that's kind of what happened to this man there in the hospital when they started to have to administer medication to him. So an officer could conclude, we've got to do something to get the knife out of his hands. And if you look at the case law, it certainly points to the direction of using some amount of force to incapacitate him in some way. And I point to the Meacham case. I point to a number of other cases. Looking at the Graham factors, in particular, we're going to look at the use of force is the use of the pepper ball launcher. So if we look at the estate of Larson factors,
but their point is, you know, at some point, the application of force is probably appropriate. But their argument is that given the nature of the plaintiff, that the escalation occurred too rapidly, that the instead of using other accommodations that were more reasonably suited to the mental health status of this individual, the officers escalated in a way that a better trained officer would have realized would trigger more violence.
If an officer is looking at the case law and pondering it, even with a monkish devotion, he would see a lot of cases where the time that passed was a minute, 2 minutes, mm-hmm. 90 seconds before action was taken. Here we have 45 to 47 minutes, and I do think, and I think there's been testimony in the record, that the officers were getting concerned that this is not getting better. This man truly is not contained. He could do a variety of things, and we've still got to get the knife out of his hand. That does become, at some point, the order of business, and the argument, I call it the just let him go argument, wasn't an option with this person. You had to do something. So I think the passage of time does, over time, become less and less an option. You eventually have to do something.
Did they have any reason to believe there were people in the house?
They did not know. Okay, and by the house I'm referring to the shack or the
right.
shed that he was...
The brother, he was secured by them. The brother was secured by them.
Yes, correct. He was up in the main house or maybe in the front driveway, I don't recall. But they knew that this man was standing there, I'm talking about Gary, in the front porch of his shed. So I'm going to emphasize the Mendez case. I'm going to emphasize the Sheehan case. This is just the bad tactics argument and the provocation rule recycled. I'm going to ask the court to also look at the issues of qualified immunity.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments this morning. The case shall be submitted and counsel are excused.